It's just a couple of days to St. Patrick's Day now, and I'm starting to see the leprechaun hats and the signs for corned beef and cabbage already. So today we're going to help you get warmed up for St. Pat's Day with one of Ireland's few remaining traditional lore keepers, who's here to give us some history and spit a few tales with us too. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm glad to be with you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is Eddie Lenihan. He's an Irish storyteller, lecturer, author, and broadcaster, and he's been called one of the greatest of Irish storytellers, and many Irish consider him a national treasure. He's the author of Meeting the Other Crowd. And we're happy to take your comments and questions this hour at 1-800-642-1234. And Eddie Lenihan, welcome.
Very much.
Well, so I'm delighted to talk with you here. And in the lead-up to today's St. Patrick's Day coming up, you may know it's a pretty big deal here in the United States.
Yes, and for a while I thought I was at home when I was listening to your news there, listening to the stories about the banks. I said, good God, that's Ireland, because we have the same problems here with our cursed banks.
Yes, well, so it's a big deal, St. Paddy's, in the United States. I don't know how it is in Ireland. I've heard it's a little bit less of a big deal. But what would you say St. Patrick's Day is like in Ireland?
It's become a bigger deal than it was, because we have an awful lot of the imported kind of stuff now that used not be there. All of these St. Patrick's hats and the red beards and all the leprechaun-y stuff, a lot of that is imported. It used not be there. It used not be half as big as it now is. But look, it's there. But if you ask most people, what do they really know about St. Patrick? Could they tell much stories about him? No. No.
So what are you yourself going to be doing on St. Patrick's Day?
I'll be in Russia.
You'll be in Russia.
Would you believe that? I've been invited to Russia.
And you'll be telling your stories, right?
To tell Irish stories for 10 days in Moscow. That's the way it has happened.
Well, that's wonderful. You'll have to bring a bit of St. Patrick's Day to Moscow then.
Yeah, isn't that strange?
Well, you are an expert on many things in terms of Irish lore and legends, but one of your specialties that is dear to your heart is the subject of fairies.
Yes.
Could you tell us about the fairies in Ireland? Who are they?
Well, the book that you mentioned, Meeting the Other Crowd, In that book, I made an effort to collect stories from the old people, genuine fairy stories. There's an awful lot of nonsense talked about the fairies. And Walt Disney, of course, did no great favour to the fairies in a lot of the films that he did. Credit in one way, but no credit in another way. The real fairies, as we have them in Ireland, are no laughing matter. They're not for children. The stories, for example, some of the stories in that book will tell you that you mess with the fairies and you're dead.
Mm.
Some of the stories there, particularly the last story in that book, is a horrible story of a man who interfered with a fairy fort. He should have known better. And what happened to him? Well, it is what any of the old people would have known should have happened to him. He made a very stupid boast. He said, I'm going to plant potatoes in that fort. Now, that is patent lunacy that you would interfere with a fairy fort, because that's where the fairies live, in those forts. And he made a threat. He thought he was a tough man. He said, I'll take the skin off of them, I'll take the roof off of their house with this spade if they interfere with me. His neighbours just nodded. They said nothing. They went away. Your man planted his potatoes. But in due course, the potatoes, they came up. Not a mark, no blight, no nothing on the stalks or the leaves. But the leaves and the stalks, they grew 8 or 9 feet high. Now, potato stalks don't grow that high. These were amazing. Eventually, they withered. They withered down as they will. Your man went to dig them. They were huge. The size of, what do you use there for Halloween? The pumpkins.
Mm.
That's was the size of the potatoes. They were massive. And he caught one of them with a spade, as you will when you're digging potatoes. You know, and, you know, when you caught a potato, you use it. It's quite good. You just use it quickly before it rots. But this one bled. Now, he thought, of course, that this is just some local variety, big deal. This is just red juice. But another one bled down along. Another one. Well, I tell you, oh yeah, he used them all right. But after that, the man, he was taken home. Shortly, got ill. He was taken to hospital. And he began to wither up. His hair, I'll shorten the story for you. His hair fell out. His skin began to peel off. His teeth fell out. He began to fall apart bit by bit. And people began to think, oh my God, he's the man, wasn't it, who made the threat that I'll take the roof off of their house. I'll take the skin off of them. Eventually he died. And, of course, people weren't surprised because you don't do that to the fairies.
Wow.
If you're expecting to live, that is.
Yeah, you don't think that the Irish fairies have heard about Walt Disney, about Tinkerbell and pixie dust. This is a whole different kind of fairy we're talking about here in Ireland.
There's no such thing. Tinkerbell is a nice invention, but not in Ireland. Not in Ireland.
So now you mentioned these fairy forts. Tell me about what a fairy fort is and how do you recognize a fairy fort?
You've seen one, you've seen them all. They're big circles in the landscape and a ditch of earth. Now remember, a ditch in Ireland is a raised mound. A ditch in England or America, you step down into it. A ditch in Ireland, you step up over it. It's the opposite of your ditch. So, and on that ditch, white thorn, hawthorn bushes grow. You'll always recognise a fairy fort, circular, with a ditch of earth all around it, and on that ditch, white thorn bushes growing. And nobody in their right senses, as I say, will, even today, even younger people would be very, very reluctant to interfere with a fairy fort because they have heard plenty of stories of people who have interfered and who have had no luck.
Well, and this gets taken pretty seriously, right? Because I think back in 1999 or 2000, an actual road in Ireland, I think you were involved with this, was rerouted to avoid going straight through a fairy fort. Now, that's not that long ago.
And that was a road that was costing millions. It was the main Ennis bypass, a new multi-laned highway. And that bush, now that was a lone white thorn bush. There was no fairy fort there, but always a lone white thorn bush. In Irish, it's called a shgach, which is the Irish name for a bush. And a lone white thorn bush is always regarded as very dangerous because that's a fairy bush. And people leave them alone. And that was right in the way of the road. Now, I knew a story about that bush because that an old man told me, and his neighbours confirmed it, that that was the boundary between Munster and Connacht. And he told me that the fairies of Munster and Connacht, because the fairies are very belligerent, they guard their territory, and that was the place where they used to fight, around that bush. And he was a cattle drover, and several times he told me that he collected cattle in that field in order to drive them to this fair or that fair for people to sell them. And he came on, not every morning, but on several mornings, and in that field he found around that bush lumps of stuff. He described to me it had the consistency of liver, but greenish. And immediately he knew the fairies had been fighting the night before. Because remember, the fairies, they're not human. They don't have red blood.
Ah, so the greenish stuff was fairy blood?
Blood. So he told me that was a fairy bush. It was a fairy bush. And I asked, of course, I inquired, because I don't believe all these stories. Believe you me, I don't credit them all. So I inquired among neighbours. Yes, 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 the old people, they knew about this bush. And it was a very old bush, you'd know, to look at it. So I was coming that way one evening, because I was teaching at that time. I used to pass there twice a day. And one evening I was passing and I saw all the machinery, digging, diggers, big diggers. And I stopped and I asked one of the men, what's happening here? And he told me, oh, this is the way the new road is coming. And I said, what's going to happen to the bush? What bush? He knew nothing about a bush. I said, that bush there. Oh, he says, look, I know nothing about that. So I found the engineer and I asked him, what's going to happen to the bush? Oh, he knew nothing, because look, bushes don't show up on a map. So I said, look, that's a fairy bush. If that bush is interfered with, there's going to be trouble here. There'll be accidents. There's going to be people killed. And of course, he laughed at me. You know, this is great fun. Ha, ha, ha. Mm-hmm. I said, this is no laughing matter. Are you going to have that in your conscience, that people are going to be killed here? So I contacted the local radio, and they had me in and talked about it. Now, I think they thought it was a kind of a paddy leprechaun joke. I wrote to the local newspaper. Then the Irish Times in Dublin picked that up. And I did something for them. And then it snowballed from there. Somebody, you know, Belgian television picked it up. French television picked it up. And then the New York Times picked it up. And that's what made the difference. The New York Times, of course, being what it is. And then it was syndicated to newspapers all over America. And, of course, The road authority here in Ireland then had to take notice, because they'd look very, very stupid if they had continued with the road when it had got that much attention.
And Eddie, is the fairy bush still there today?
They did the sensible thing and they varied the road just slightly around it.
Uh-huh.
Slightly. And the road is fine now. You know, it has made no difference to the road. And the bush is down now in the middle, just under an overpass. But the bush is there.
So is it fair to say that in Ireland today, if you ask the right people, do people still believe in fairies?
Oh God, yes. And that's my business, partly, collecting these stories. And, you know, at the start, people will laugh and they'll mock. But if you keep talking, you'll find very quickly under the surface, it's no joke. People do. People do.
Well, our guest this hour is Eddie Lenihan. He is an Irish author, storyteller, and broadcaster. And he's been called one of the greatest of Irish storytellers. He's been collecting these stories for upwards of 40 years. And one of his specialties are the Irish fairies. And we're hearing about them this hour. Fairies you don't want to tangle with. We're not talking Tinkerbell. And we'll be hearing more about Irish fairies when we come back. And we're happy to take your questions and your comments about the fairies of Ireland and maybe some other stories that you may have heard, because Eddie's been collecting stories a long time. So feel free to give us a ring and see what Eddie has to say as we get warmed up for St. Patrick's Day. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And you can also send us an email to talk@wpr.org or check in on our Facebook page. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And coming up at 12:30 today, join us for Chapter a Day as Susan Sweeney reads from Blood, Bones, and Butter, The Inadvertent Education of a Reluctant Chef. And then at 1 o'clock, it is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. Are you a cyberchondriac? It's a new word for me. Join Ira Flato on Science Friday for a look at our obsession with finding health information on the web and what doctors are learning from your search efforts. Plus, how even a single concussion may cause brain damage, and could your fat help treat brain cancer? A lot going on today on Talk of the Nation Science Friday. This hour, we're getting warmed up for St. Patrick's Day with our guest Eddie Lenihan, who's an Irish storyteller and an author and lecturer, broadcaster. He's been collecting stories from the Emerald Isle for about 40 years, and one of his specialties is fairies, so we're starting off with them this hour. And we're happy to take your questions and your comments for Eddie at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And Eddie, I wonder, you told us that pretty harrowing story about the misguided fellow who grew potatoes where the fairy fort had been. It led to his undoing. Are there any gentle stories about fairies where there is a little bit of that enchanting magic that some of us expect from fairies?
Yes. In fact, the basic thing is you mind your own business. They mind their own business. They're not looking for trouble at all. It's a case of you just go your own way and they'll go yours. In fact, they're very much like us. They have their houses in the fairy forts. They have their roads. They have their paths. They have their games. They play football or hurling. They have their music, dancing. And the funny thing is, funny now in the sense of peculiar, very often, people, and I've heard these stories quite often, people have been on their way home at night, accosted by the fairies and asked to take part in their games. Because it's always been said that the fairies always need a human being to do their business properly. And if you're the person they meet, they'll always ask you, will you join them? And if you do, they'll probably reward you. If you don't, big trouble for you. And sometimes a person who had a tremendous gift of music or dancing or who was a great footballer or hurler or whatever it might be, people used to say about that person, he must have got that from the fairies. Now, he'd never admit it, of course. But why? Why? Why did that person stand out so much? You know, he must have got it from someplace else. And that was the explanation. So, you know, they weren't all bad. They could reward you as well as do the other thing.
So we're not talking about trinkets here that the fairies give you. We're talking about substantial gifts. They can make you an incredible athlete.
Gifts that could make you rich for life. All you had to do was oblige them.
Well,
but, like I say, there was the other side of it. You didn't oblige. And look, if you met them at night, that must have been a frightening experience. So you had to be a pretty brave person to take your place with a team of them. We'll say they were playing football or such, or if they were dancing, or if they were doing whatever. And you met them in a lonely place on your way home across the fields at night. Because remember, maybe at that time, most people were cycling or walking, or more than likely walking across the fields, taking a shortcut. Nowadays, nobody sees anything because everybody has wheels under them and they're all listening to radios. Everybody's in a car. What are you going to see if you're driving? Nothing. But at a time when everybody knew the name of every field, when they were walking across fields, taking a shortcut, that was a different time. And those are the kind of old people that I talked to. People who knew their countryside, knew every single field, and knew the name of each field individually. And the names of those fields are mostly in Irish. You know, Páirc Uile, Páirc na Gcath, Bunahow. You know, all of those names have a specific meaning that mean something special.
And I know that for you, one of the unsettling things about fairies was that they can shift shapes. In fact, something, a form they take particularly often, I gather, is the black dog.
Very much so. Excuse me one second, I'm taking a drink of tea. I had an experience of that myself. And I have to admit, it was the only experience I have ever had of the fairies. Now, if it be such, because I won't claim 100% that it was. I was coming home I was going to Limerick this particular morning when I was teaching. I have since retired. And near Bunratty Castle, which a lot of people will know, because Bunratty is pretty famous because of the banquets and all of that, I was going by that, just before that, and I was on the new road. I used to travel the old road previously, before they built the new road, but as I was going on there, driving on there, I looked to my left. Suddenly I saw something moving, and just there, there's a house, just still there, big farmhouse, and there's a large lawn, or a small field, call it what you will, in front of that. And I saw, out of the corner of my eye, this big black dog, almost the size of a donkey. Now, in the middle of the field it was. And in an eye blink, it was gone. Now, if it was near the ditch, near the bushes, I'd have said it had just gone into the bushes. But no, it was in the middle of the field and it was gone. Now, I had to keep going. I was in traffic. I had to keep going. But when I got into the staff room, into school, some of the teachers must have noticed that there was something odd about me. And one of them asked, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Look, I'll tell you at break time." And I did. And of course, they all laughed. They said, "You must have had a few pints last night, ha ha." And I said, "No, I hadn't. I saw what I saw." Anyway, time passed and I forgot about it. I looked in the same place a few other times passing and I never saw anything else. But a while afterwards, maybe 6 weeks or a month, a couple of months afterwards, I was visiting an old man in that place, wonderful old man who knew his history. He's dead since, God rest the man. And it came up in conversation, just out of the blue, without any, you know, we were talking about something else, but this came up out of the blue about the Latoon black dog, just there. And it was a huge black dog. There was a fort there at that place, which was bulldozed, stupidly bulldozed back in the 1950s. And that dog, he used to be there at the mouth of that fort. Monster of a black dog, lying there with his paws out in front of him like a dog that would be lying in front of a fire, staring out at the road, watching people passing on the road outside. Now, nobody ever investigated him. Huge monster of a dog like that, never did any harm to anybody. But I am convinced that that's the animal I saw that morning, because I never knew anything about him. I never knew anything about the fort. If I did know about it beforehand, I'd have said, that's my imagination playing tricks on me. But I knew nothing about it until afterwards. So, maybe, I don't know. But I've heard plenty stories about the black dog after. And the black dog, of course, is always one of the shapes that the fairies can take on.
Oh, so interesting. Now I want to go to Ireland and look for a black dog. But if it took you a whole lifetime to have two sightings, I can't imagine it would come very easy.
Not necessarily that you'll find it. They show themselves when they wish or if they wish.
Well, you know what? Let's go to the callers who are waiting to get in and talk with you. We'll go first to Dave, who's joining us from Cobb. Hi, Dave.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
That's true. My grandmother was Irish, and she always would tell the story about Bridget. When I was young and I didn't understand at that time.
And you're referring to St. Bridget?
I think I was, but I don't know for sure.
Do you have any stories, Eddie, or anything interesting to tell us about St. Bridget?
About St. Bridget?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Oh, Lord, there are very St. Patrick and St. Bridget, and, I mean, they're two of the main saints of Ireland, and St. Columbkill, of course, being the third. I'll tell you, one of the main I won't say one of the main, there are so many stories about St. Bridget, like St. Bridget's cloak and the cutter of Kildare throwing out her cloak, and it spread and spread and spread and spread until it covered the whole cutter of Kildare to, where her monastery of Kildare is today. That's one, it's a lovely, lovely story. And if that gentleman will send me his my email, if I can give it.
Sure.
EddieLenehan1@gmail.com. You may give it to him there, and I'll send him a few stories of St. Bridget.
That's Eddie Lenehan, is spelled L-E-N-I-H-A-N. And that
that's
it,
one, as in number one.
The number one.
gmail.com.
gmail.com. And you did tell us that bit about her cloak spreading and spreading. That's
I will indeed. And I'll find a few other ones as well for him.
All right. Well, thank you for that call. And we'll go next to Renee, who's joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Renee.
Hi. When I was young, around the town of Erin, there was a very small two-story house, no taller than the corn that would grow in the field beside the house. There was a gate all the way around, or a fence all the way around the house, but no gate. And it would be there sometimes when we drive by, and other times it would not. And we always called it the fairy house. And we would stop and we'd look at it, and we never ever got out of the car. There was just something about it that we figured we shouldn't get out of the car. It was that special, and it would be there sometimes, and other times it would not. It would just be a field. And then sometime in the 70s, apparently someone sold the field that the house used to be on, and they built a regular farm type of, one-story house and kids' toys in the yard, and the magic was gone.
What a great story, Renee. Thank you. And I bet that kind of story is pretty familiar to you, Eddie.
Oh, indeed. I was in a fairy house. I mean, in a genuine fairy house that had been... You see, the problem here is, as I said to you earlier, the fairies are like us in so many ways. They have their houses, they have their paths, they have their roads, they have their entertainments. But the problem is, if you build your house on one of their paths, then you are in big trouble because you are blocking their access. And you'll have no look, or you'll have nothing but disturbance in that house until you move it. Now, that's going to be a very expensive process. So it would be a lot easier never to build it there in the first place. But how do you know that the path is there? Now, remember, the old people weren't stupid. We may think they were, or that they were primitive. They weren't. They had to deal with the same problems as we had. So what they used to do was, just to make sure that there was no path in the place that they proposed to build their house, was they got four hazel sticks, good solid hazel sticks, about maybe a foot or 18 inches long. And in the site where they proposed to build their house, they would hammer down those sticks at each corner of where they proposed to build the house. Now, clear the cattle out of that field on that night that you hammered down the sticks. And if there was no movement of the sticks when you got up in the morning, if they were still in the same place, no problem. You could build the house. But if any of those sticks was moved, you had problems. Shift them around and keep shifting them around until none of them was moved. That's the way the old people used to do it.
Wow.
That's how they used to test for a fairy path.
And the fairies were obliging enough, not to cause trouble then. It sounds like they just helped you move your sticks around until you find a spot for your house that's not going to get in their way.
Absolutely. And I tell you, I try not to be credulous. I'd rather not believe and not believe and not believe. first of all, second, third, fourth. But I tell you, sometimes you meet the kind of people who are not stupid, not easily frightenable. They're certainly not drunkards. I'd never believe a person who's on drugs. Never, ever, ever, because a person on drugs will see whatever they want to see. But sometimes you meet, you know, very solid, sensible people who have had these kind of experiences, and they're the kind of people I'm looking for. And I do meet them. I do meet them. And I was in one of these fairy houses, and the man who lived there, he explained all about what happened, and it was an amazing story. I won't tell it to you now, it's too long. But I was in that house with him. He's dead now. The house is empty. But it's still there. And he told me how eventually they fixed the problem. They had to eventually open another door to let the fairies through, because they had built the house in the wrong place.
And they had to create a fairy passageway.
Exactly. Exactly. But once that was done, no more problems. And you can still see the mark on the wall where one door was closed and another one opened up. Because the fairies were striking the wall at the back of the house. And it was an old travelling man who explained to his father, to the man who told me the story, it was his father built the house. It was an old travelling man who explained, look, the fairies are striking the wall there at the back. And if you don't do something, close up that door, open up the one beside it, you'll have nothing but trouble here in this house. You'll have to leave it. He did that. No more trouble. So, you know, travelling men sometimes knew these things just from their experiences on the road.
So when you're looking for these keepers of stories, and you found so many of them over the years, are the people that you find, the people that you believe, are they generally older people, or are there younger people who believe in fairies just as much and who have this treasure of stories that you have?
Practically all old people nowadays. You see, Ireland has changed so much in the last even 20 years. They're nearly all old people. In my collection here of tapes and MDs, I look through them now, and one after the other, you know, I look at the brackets after the names, 90-something, 80-something, 90-something, 90-something, all of the people's ages. Last week, for example, I was talking to an old man of 101, and he had all his wits. Wonderful old man. Wonderful man. And he told me 5 great stories. It's a tremendous man. And when I was going out the door, be sure to call back again soon. You know, only delighted to have somebody to talk to at the age of 101. And next week, when I get back from Russia, because I'll be going there next Tuesday, I'm to visit an old man of 102.
Wow.
So, you know, there are still some of them left.
Right. And well, does that worry you as someone who collects stories that
it does.
This generation of stories may be dying out? And who will keep them anymore?
That's right. That is right. Because, look, everybody watching television now, what's on television? Nothing. Nothing. Because television stuff, it's too scripted. It belongs to nowhere. Whereas the stories belonged in a place, from a place to a place. And they were local. They told you something about where you came from. Television tells you nothing about nothing. It may be entertaining, I'm not saying it isn't. But sometimes, you know, I think of the old pop song, you know, 24 channels and nothing on. Now it's 244 right. channels and nothing on.
If not,
you know,
more.
Exactly. I often flick down there now at night when I'm just tired at night, just flick down through the beep, 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 through the channels. And you could do that to entertain yourself anymore. You never have to look at anything. Just flick down through the channel names, and my God, I often say, hey, what is this junk? This is nonsense. It is junk. 99.8% of it is junk compared to one old person that I could be listening to. who is telling me tremendously interesting stuff. For example, one of the old men, that they are closing a great number of police barracks here now in Ireland to save money, mainly rural police barracks. And I recall from my own place, my own native place in Kerry, they're closing that. And it was that is a listed building. They can't do anything. They can't demolish it because it's a listed building. It belongs to the OPW, the Office of Public Works. It was an RIC barracks, you know, the English police when they were here, the Royal Irish Constabulary. And I remember when I started collecting, my first man who told me stories, Jack Leahy. He's dead since 1984, but he died at the age of 94. Very sad story about that barracks. And that was, Jack told me that his brother, he said that his brother went to that barracks to join up the English army. And the RIC sergeant who was stationed there, now, you often hear stories about the RIC here, you know, they were a shower of bastards, you know, they were the English police, they were blah, 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 they were the peelers and all that. But of course they weren't. They were all Irishmen serving in the English police, but they were all Irishmen. Now, Jack's brother went to collect the papers to join the British Army, and the sergeant, being a decent man, saw that if he joined the army, now this was in 1916, when the First World War was at its height, that if he went to France, he'd probably be killed. So he said, go away home, your father needs you. He went home. But one of the locals, Smart Alex, said to the young fella, hey, if you go back there three times, he'll have to give you them papers. So the young fella went back again to the barracks. Sergeant told him, didn't I tell you go home? Get out of it. Go home. He went back again. Home. But he came back to the barracks a third time. And of course, the sergeant had to give him the papers. Back he went to Tralee, to Ballymullen Barracks, to the British Army station. Did his basic training. Was sent to France. To Flanders. And you know what happened to him? Of course you do. He was killed. Never came home. And Jack told me that story in 1978. Now, remembering back to his brother's death in 1916, after all those years. And now that barracks has been closed. You know, I remember stories like that. You know, you can't forget them. I can still look at that barracks today. You know, and it's only a building. But when you think of all the fellas that passed through that, you know, it's more than a building. It's more than a building. There's history there, and live people and dead people, and I have that on tape. So the voices aren't quite stilled. And another thing, which is so strange when you think of it, Jack telling me that when he was a boy at school, that the postman used to call in to the school to give the letters to the young fellas. Because it was too much trouble because he was walking at the time. He hadn't even a bike. He'd give the letters to the children, which was highly illegal. If he was caught doing it, he'd lose his job. But the schoolmaster didn't mind. So he'd give the letters to the children to deliver at home. And Jack remembered the schoolmaster asking the postman, any news from the war today? Do you know what war he was talking about?
No, I don't.
The Boer War, 1901-1902. Now, that's going back a fair bit.
It is. Wow, these stories.
And I have all those on tape.
Well, I feel better knowing that you're in possession of these stories, Eddie, and I'm sure that we'll have more of them and we'll hear more of them when we come back from our break. We're talking with Eddie Lenihan. He's an Irish storyteller, an author, a lecturer, and a broadcaster. He has been called one of the greatest Irish storytellers, and many Irish consider him a national treasure. He's also the author of several books, include Meeting the Other Crowd. And we've been talking a little bit about fairies in Ireland today, getting warmed up for St. Patrick's Day, and branching off into Irish storytelling. And we welcome your phone call this morning, your email as well. well for Eddie Lenihan, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And coming up at 12:30, it's Chapter a Day as Susan Sweeney reads from Blood, Bones, and Butter, The Inadvertent Education of a Reluctant Chef. And this hour, we're getting a little bit warmed up for St. Patrick's Day coming up on Sunday with one of Ireland's preeminent storytellers and collectors of stories, Eddie Lenihan, who's been collecting stories for over 40 years in the Emerald Isle. We've been hearing about fairies so far, and we'll hear more as this hour progresses. We'll go next to Leslie Jo, who is reaching us from Balsam Lake. Hi, Leslie Jo.
Hi there. I was in Ireland in 2010, my first visit over there, and I stayed in a lovely little cottage called Breen Cottage in County Antrim. And I found out once I got there that I was a 15-minute walk away from Breen Forest, which is a 2,000-year-old oak wood that was spared the axe because a fairy fort lies within. And when I got there, I had learned a little bit of Gaelic, so I kept saying, "Is Anshame, I'm digging to," which means, "I am here, do you understand?" And from that point on, I found coins. I ended up with like a pocket full of coins. And people in Ireland, I said, why is everybody so careless with their coin? And they would say, well, I never find coins. So I ended up with this pocket full of coins. And at this point now, I'm going back next month to close on a cottage that I found. And I just feel that the fairies have blessed me since I've been going back to Ireland. I've been there. This will be my fourth trip back in 2 years. And I feel that they cherish me because I cherish them.
Oh, what a cool story, Leslie Jo. So you're going back and you're going to, will you live in this cottage full time or just visit it?
I will visit it. I love Ireland. I love the way of life, and it's just a slower pace than it is here in the States. And so I hope to someday retire to the cottage. It's right on the Irish Sea, the former kingdom of the Dalriada. And so I'm just enchanted, and I've met such kind people there, and I find coins. Every time I go back, I just find coins.
That's amazing. So, Eddie, have you heard about fairies leaving coins for people that they like?
No, I can't say I have, because, no, if the coins were silver or gold, I could understand it. Yes, maybe. Maybe. Because remember, there are seven things the fairies are afraid of. And the people, old people used to always say that if you meet the fairies, and if you have any doubt at all, it's better to have one of these seven things with you. Something holy. Now, every religion has its holy things. Something holy, something dirty, something red. Like I told you, they're not human, so they don't like the color of blood. Something holy, something dirty, something red. Iron or steel. The thing they're most afraid of is a black-handled knife. Now, not to use it on them, but just to have it, and they'll know you have it. Iron or steel. Salt, fire, and if you have none of those six things, if you meet them, run. But it's no good running from them. They're faster than you. But if you can get as far as flowing water, a stream, and if you can get across that, they can't cross flowing water.
Why not?
Those are the seven things. They just can't cross flowing water. That's why you'll often hear stories of the banshee, for example, crying, down, down, down along the side of a river. But she can't cross it. she can't cross it.
Mm. Wow.
Those are the seven things that the fairies are afraid of.
The seven things. So salt was one, the color red, the
black-handled
knife.
And if you examine those seven things closely, you'll find out how old, ancient belief must be in the fairies. It must go way, way back to the Stone Age. For example, the one you mentioned there, salt. When people were hunting and eating their meat, probably raw, salt must have been a wonderful invention because it preserved the meat. Fire. It kept the evil spirits at bay when people were living in caves. And go on, and down along, you know. Flowing water. Clean flowing water. As opposed to dirty, stagnant water from a pool. Clean water, like out of a well. You need that to stay alive. No, and on like that, and on like that. You know, fire. As I say, to keep the evil spirits away. You know, so these things go back into the dim mists of history.
Well, thank you so much, Leslie, for your comment, your story, and I wish you well in your new life in Ireland. And we move next to Janet, joining us from Oak Creek. Hi, Janet.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just going back to the road and the bush that was saved, I was wondering what type of a bush was it, and then what is the connection between elderberries and fairies? And I will listen off the air.
Okay. Thank you.
The type of a bush with the road was hawthorn, white thorn. And the connection between elderberries and fairies, I've never heard any.
So the hawthorn bush, is that something that grows? I should know this. Does the hawthorn bush grow in the United States as well, Eddie? Do you think there are fairies here?
I'd be very, very surprised if there weren't fairy stories among the Native Americans. Very surprised.
Hmm. Well, I wish you well as you collect more of these stories. There are so many wonderful stories, and there are many of them on your website. Is that right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And they're written down.
A list of all the publications. And I'm sorry we hadn't more time today for the St. Patrick story, but another time. And I meant to tell us a short St. Patrick story, but... Sorry about that.
Well, give us your website so that people can go and dig around and learn some more stories.
Yeah. EddieLenahan1@gmail.com.
Oh, right. That's your email. But here it is. It's EddieLenahan.net. Right. If people want to go and dig around for some more of these wonderful stories, it's a veritable treasure trove of Irish stories there for you to enjoy. And Eddie, thank you so much for joining us. I'm so glad that you're doing what you're doing. It makes me feel better about Ireland's stories to have story keepers like you. And I wish you a happy St. Patrick's Day, even if it is in Moscow.
Thank you very much.
All right. By the way,
I have to take dollars with me.
Yes, that's right. All right. Well, thank you, Eddie Lenahan. We are talking with Eddie Lenahan, of course, this hour, who is an Irish storyteller, lecturer, and broadcaster. He's been called one of the greatest Irish storytellers, and many Irish consider him a national treasure. He's got lots of books, including one called Meeting the Other Crowd. Marika Suval produced this hour with Rhonda Fanning, and Judith Sears-Poisson answered your phone calls. And we're saying goodbye to our guests a little bit early today because there's a bit of news that I wanted to share with you. And that is that Friday, March 29th, is going to be my last day hosting this Friday program. And I'm going to so miss being here with all of you on Fridays. But I'm also incredibly excited to be going on to new adventures here at Wisconsin Public Radio. So in the next, couple of months, you'll be hearing me back on the air again. This time I'll be joined by a co-host and another colleague, a voice you know here, Rob Ferret. And meanwhile, on Fridays, Anne Strange Champs, my friend and colleague from To the Best of Our Knowledge, she is going to be taking over the reins of this program. And lots of new exciting things happening there as well. So keep listening there and listen for me again in a couple of months. But I'll be with you through the month of March. And in the meantime, I wish you well. And I will see you back here next Friday again on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.